Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your captain, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Tech Sergeant Michael Snydell.
Reporting for duty.
And Navigator Bill Graham.
We're offline!
I feel like that's something the communications officer would say, but since we didn't appoint one, I guess, yeah, you can do that. So we are here.
The communications officer at that point has died, so I'm taking over.
Okay. Yeah.
Holding double duty.
He wasn't one of the, like, what is it? It's usually like two or three people who survive a space movie. You have a crew of like between six and nine.
Yeah. It's usually someone that can actually like fucking fix the ship, like has some know-how and is not the communications officer.
Yeah, the communications officer never survives. That's like a cold hard fact of space travel.
Just as useless as a communications degree.
Oh snap. Higher education, right. Burn from Michael Snydell. So
that hits at the guys.
So we're here today because a number of trailers dropped during the Super Bowl yesterday, which, by the way, I correctly guessed the outcome of. Fly, Eagles, fly. Anyway.
Yeah. Fuck Donald Trump.
And I correctly predicted that the Solo trailer would drop, and y'all were like, no. And I was like, okay.
I'm also going to say that I correctly predicted that the Doritos commercial would be the best one.
The Tide commercials are still.
Well,
the
Bill,
best.
I mean, they're all Tide ads.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
As long as their clothes were clean, it was a Tide ad. There was also, this is just, I don't know why we're talking about commercials, but the best commercial, honestly, the thing that sold me the most on its product was the commercial of a Jeep Wrangler fording a 3-foot deep river and then climbing a minor waterfall.
Yes. I saw
this is not the Jeff Goldblum one, I assume, then?
No. Okay.
That was
the
fun.
One after that. Yeah.
But there was one that was literally just a single take of a voice saying, like, usually a car commercial has, like, inspiring voiceover. And this came right after, well, not right after, but it came some point in the telecast after the Ram ad that had Martin Luther King Jr. speaking.
What
and
the
so
fuck?
I was like, well, sick burn. And then it's like, but we don't have any of that. And it's just this Jeep fording a river and then crawling up and like a minor waterfall. And I was just like, my God, that's the sexiest thing I've ever seen. So my next car is going to be a Jeep Wrangler. That's how commercials
Not
work.
Dangerous at all.
Yes, but we did get a Solo trailer. We got our an Avengers Infinity War trailer. We got a Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer.
Mission Impossible,
which was great.
That thing was fire.
Yes,
fire.
That was hot fire. I'm keeping it 100. That trailer was fire. Oh, God, I've never felt whiter. Anyway, but we got a trailer for a movie that's been in the offing for a little over a year now. It got its date pushed back, and then it got sold to Netflix, and everyone was like, well, I wonder when it's going to come out. And we learned during the Super Bowl that it was coming out right goddamn now.
That is... No, we didn't. Actually, we didn't learn during the Super Bowl.
Well, yes,
because the trailer had vague language about it dropping very soon, and I was like, "What the fuck does that even mean?"
And then
I do a podcast about movies, and I don't even know what the fuck that means.
But again, considering how a lot of limited releases work, that's just as helpful.
Sure.
But
yeah, you go online and you're like, when does that thing? Oh, tonight. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So we found out that it was airing right after the Super Bowl. So the second the Super Bowl is over, Fly Eagles Fly. That strip sack, man. That I mean, it didn't turn the game. They were already winning, but it definitely locked it. Anyway, this is the soak it in, ladies and gentlemen. This is the only time I will ever talk about sports. But after the Super Bowl, everyone was like, oh shit, now we can watch the Cloverfield Paradox. We were all excited. We probably shouldn't have been. So we're going to talk
spoilers
about
spoilers for our thoughts.
We're going to review it. In fact, I'm going to do something right now that everyone can listen to me do. I'm getting on the Film Stage Show Twitter. Mm. And I'm going to compose a tweet. And I'm going to say hashtag.
This is live, guys. This is breaking.
Cloverfield Paradox episode dropping very soon. Boom. All right. So that's happening. And
wait, is another This Is Us dropping tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to murder Jack all over again. spoilers for This Is Us, I assume.
For like the first episode of This Is Us.
And apparently what is that thing called? Not an Instant Pot, just the regular version
Crock-Pot.
Of one of those.
Like, still,
yeah, Crock-Pot.
Do not let people, a lot of people watch that show. Let's not spoil that.
Well, apparently the Crock-Pot thing happened in the last episode. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well,
we're here to talk about the Cloverfield Paradox, which happened right after the Super Bowl. A lot of people were super excited. I know I was excited. We'll get into it. First of all, let me say, follow us at Film Stage Show, where you can now see the tweet that I sent out. You can also follow us on the Film Stage Show on Facebook. Find us on iTunes, give us a comment and rating, and email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. Give it to our Patreon, patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. For as little as $1 an episode, you get access to our super cool Slack channel, which was alight last night with every new trailer that dropped. And you also get entered into some raffles, and you help us to produce other new episodes of this show for your listening pleasure. We're going to be recording Paris, Texas at some point this week, our classic review, thanks to our lovely Patreon subscribers. And if you'd like to be a part of that, again, go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Also, go to Mubi.com/filmstage, and you get a 30-day free trial of Mubi, the coolest online streaming cinema, unlike Netflix, which we're going to be talking about it today. Mubi releases one film a day, and you have 30 days to watch it, so you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 films. It's perfectly curated. It's some of the best of independent, world, and classic cinema for your viewing enjoyment. They currently have, in theaters, a movie that they produced, unlike Netflix, that is Lover for a Day by Philippe Gorel. Go to loverforaday.mubi.com to see if it's playing near you. And if you would like a free 30-day trial to stream and download and watch some of the best films that are available online, go to mubi.com/filmstage. So that's it. 8:15. That's got to be a record for us. We now able to talk about the movie that everyone was talking about last night, and I presume no one will be talking about past, like, let's say Wednesday, which is why we have to get this out fast to ride that wave of zeitgeist. Before we get into the actual review, everyone watched this movie today, right? Like, no one really jumped on right after the Super Bowl.
I watched about 20 minutes of it, and I was like, I'm time for bed. I just stayed up watching 4 hours of entertainment, so
yeah,
it was done.
That was also a very exhausting game. It was a nail biter.
Yes.
Michael Snydell, you watched this today, correct?
I wasn't able to make it last night. What happened is my girlfriend fell asleep, so I said, you know what? I want to watch a science fiction movie, which was good. It certainly had that ending.
Yeah. So I have a confession to make. I watched this movie during a lull in my day on my cell phone.
Woo!
Okay.
There's a part of me that as I was doing it, because I really like, I'm a fan of the Cloverfield series insofar as to say I loved Cloverfield. I thought 10 Cloverfield Lane was a really great movie that had no business being called Cloverfield. And I was super excited after the Super Bowl spot, which promised that it would tie everything together and show where that monster came from. I was super excited to see it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch it. I can't stop myself. I'm too excited. If it's good, I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch it on a big screen at home with my wife. And that didn't happen. So spoilers for my thoughts on this movie. But as I was sitting there in a chair watching with headphones in, pausing every now and then so I could draw the phone closer to my face to read what I assumed would be important documents, I thought to myself, is this the best way to watch this movie? And then I thought to myself, Netflix certainly seems to think so. And so I didn't feel bad about it. I did not feel bad about it. I paused it a couple of times so that I could respond to text messages and open emails. And I went back and I just kept thinking to myself, like, this doesn't feel honest, Brian. And then I said, dude, Netflix put it out. They didn't lock your iPhone app saying, dude, can you please watch this on a television? So I felt like I was well within my rights to watch this movie in that way. I'm just putting it out there.
So it would be more honest if Netflix had a fascist distribution method where you were only allowed to watch it on screens larger than
I play dimension. Some video games, you know, and a video game can't tell you like your computer's too small, but it does say like for best use we recommend playing with headphones and turn your volume all the way up. And even the Blu-ray for Song to Song, my number one film of the year by director Terrence Malick, had a thing before the movie started that said, hey, turn your speakers up. And I was like, okay, I guess I will, movie. And it's just like, so barring anything like that, if Netflix is like, here, you're tired of watching Frasier, why don't you watch the Cloverfield Paradox? Who am I to say no? So this is the first ever movie that I have watched entirely on my phone that I'm reviewing on this show. So I'm excited. I can't wait to see how this goes. So, barring anything else, are we all prepared emotionally, physically, existentially to talk about the Cloverfield Paradox?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Possible earthquake near the Statue of Liberty.
Looks like you should have left town a little bit earlier.
Whatever you're doing, stop.
All right, so that was the trailer for the Cloverfield Paradox. Are you okay, Michael?
What happened at the end of that trailer?
Oh, it's one of those stupid YouTube channels where it's like, oh, you watched the trailer, now subscribe to our thing. Check out the trailer for Han Solo, a Star Wars story. Or Jurassic Park or Jurassic World 2.
Super yeah, Bowl of Brian came back right there a little bit.
Yeah, it did. Super Bowl Brian came back real, real hard for a second. So anyway, the Cloverfield Paradox. The, I guess, another blood relative, quote unquote, to
Kissing
Cloverfield.
Cousins.
I'm sorry, what?
Kissing Cousins.
Oh, God.
Right. Wow.
That's a whole different thing. Let's move very quickly past whatever dark insight we got into Michael's psyche. To the Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane. This particular film, directed by Julius Ona, based on, well, yeah, story by and script by Oren Uziel and Doug Jung.
Sure.
Yeah. This movie has one of the most stacked casts that I think I could ever possibly conceive of. It's got Gugu Mbatha-Raw. It's got David Oyelowo. It's got Daniel Brühl. John Ortiz, who is a character actor who I happen to love. He's great in Luck, if you haven't seen that. Chris O'Dowd, who is hilarious. Axel Henny,
yes.
Who's just got a great name. Ziyi Zhang, who I have had a low-key crush on since Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And
is this one of her only American films, other than Rush Hour 2?
I was about to say this in the Rush Hour movie she was in.
Oh, boy.
Memoirs of a Geisha, does that count?
I guess so.
I'm sorry.
Isn't that a Ron Howard movie?
Memoirs of a Geisha? No, I think that's Frank Marshall.
Yeah, it's someone kind of hacky.
Oh, it's Rob Marshall. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Rob Marshall.
Okay. Frank Marshall, Rob Marshall.
Yeah, one of the Marshalls. Yeah,
Frank Marshall's definitely a producer. I was like, whoa, I didn't know he stepped behind the camera.
Frank Marshall has made movies, right?
Are you thinking of Penny Marshall? Penny Marshall's pretty great.
What about Gary Marshall?
Gary Marshall's pretty great, too.
Okay, anyway, let's stop talking about that. We also have Elizabeth...
F. Gary Gray?
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Guys, we really don't want to talk about this movie, do we?
Coffee is for closers. I'm going to see how many Glengarry Glen Ross little stings I can put into this entire podcast. Yeah, and also Elizabeth Debicki. Debicki? Mm-hmm. Anyone help me out here?
Debicki.
Great. So that's a pretty great cast. And it's in service of a, what I have to like admit up front, is a pretty cool idea for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Orbiting the planet Earth
ideas.
On the brink of war. Yeah. So it's, all right, I was going to read the IMDb ones, but I can just wing it. So basically we got an international group of scientists who are above the Earth in a space station, trying to get a particle accelerator to work to avert like world war because our energy reserves are going down. Cool. Topical. Great. Like it. And when they finally get the thing to work, something happens. And when they look out the windows, they realize that the Earth is no longer there. That is a dynamite pitch for a movie. And tying it in with Cloverfield... Mm-hmm. That's pretty great too. So let's talk about this. First of all, Michael Snydell, what are your thoughts on the first two Cloverfield movies, and what are your thoughts on the Cloverfield Paradox?
Yeah,
oh, I also
forgot
Donald Logue is in this movie.
Yes, briefly as a pundit.
Performance in the movie.
I quite like the first two Cloverfields, and I've admitted this on Slack. I've kind of been a sucker for J.J. Abrams' kind of mystery box advertising approach for, I guess, going on was Cloverfield like a decade ago?
That's what it said. Yeah.
All right. Well, since like Cloverfield, since that first teaser, I didn't quite get into the ARG the way a lot of other people did, but I definitely.
Oh, I did.
Found.
I was one of those poor saps who like did a whole other ARG thinking that it was part of the Cloverfield ARG and then finding out that it wasn't at all.
Wait, there was a fake there was a second fake ARG?
I would have to look it up to know exactly what I'm talking about, but I do know that people were like, man, we found another website. We don't know if it's related to Cloverfield, but what else could it be? And I was like, good enough for me. And it turned out that it was related to like something completely different.
Oh man. Well, if someone wants to do a deep dive into how extensive that viral marketing was, there's a Little White Lies piece all about like it's a deep dive into that, and it's really fantastic. So Cloverfield was something that that was before found footage became a bad word, and while I admittedly like it. It's certainly, if I watched it again, I might be seasick within the first 15 minutes. But back then, it did feel revelatory in a strange way. And while it doesn't maybe hold together, I know I caught bits of it on FX even 4 or 5 years ago. And it felt weirdly carbon dated by the time I watched it. But I still think it's a really solid... foundation, although I obviously never would have expected it would become a universe, because and the other, so as 10 Cloverfield Lane, I like 10 Cloverfield Lane a lot, and I have some qualms about where it goes in the last 15-20 minutes. I don't know. I kind of think it's productive to talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane's spoilers in relation to this maybe later.
Yeah, maybe when we do the spoilers for this movie, we can spoil them all.
All right, I'll leave it at that. I think 10
Cloverfield
Lane...
One spoiler to rule them all.
we'll be comprehensive in our spoilers. I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead specifically and John Goodman in... 10 Cloverfield is it's a fantastic two-hander. It's a really economic Hitchcockian thriller that works way better than it should. And the Cloverfield paradox. Okay.
You can keep it brief for now.
All right. I'll keep it brief. This is a really bad movie. And it's, I tweeted this earlier, and you know, I meant it as a joke, but I kind of think that this movie's biggest legacy is going to be this marketing stunt. This movie is such a jumbled mess of influences and half-baked ideas, and also a punishing lack of logic. Like, this is almost like the quintessential Netflix movie, a Netflix original movie, in the sense that like it kind of makes you feel more insulted the more you actually pay attention to it, because then you start thinking about what's actually happening, and you realize, like, I kind of wish I half watched this movie. Like, I gave it all of my attention, and by the end I was just thinking, okay, so things are working now. Okay, something's gonna happen here. And Deus Ex Machinas are, I mean, it's pretty common in sci-fi movies especially, but there's something about Cloverfield Paradox that, like, it's not a movie. Like, it's a bunch of unfinished ideas and foundations for thrillers, foundations for, like, character-based, I don't know, mushy character-based, I don't even know what to call it. Seriously, right after I finished this movie, I started thinking about 25 different movies that did every part of this movie better.
Yeah, I was about to say.
There's more to talk about.
They may have only done, like, one part of it, but they did it so much better.
Like, that's the only thing I can distill it back to, is that, like, this cast is great, but they are flailing, and this is a bad movie.
Yeah. I just want to pause to say, I don't know if you all know this. I just saw this right now, that John Mahoney, who played the dad on Frasier, passed away.
Yes, I saw that.
I didn't see that. I only just saw it now. And that's kind of crazy, because I've been watching Frasier. So that hits me hard. Sorry. I fucking love that guy.
I think he's a Chicago native, actually.
That makes sense. I mean, his name is Mahoney, so.
That's true. That's a very Chicago name.
Yeah. So just wanted to pour out a Ballantine's beer for John Mahoney.
Or listen to Ricky, Don't Lose Your Number.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So, Bill Graham, why don't you tell us what you thought of the Cloverfield Paradox? But first, give us your thoughts on. You were on the episode where we talked about 10 Cloverfield Lane, but give us your brief recap.
Hell yeah.
Of your thoughts on Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Sure. This will be pretty quick. I enjoyed 10 Cloverfield for kind of the marketing and all the hype around it. As far as the film itself, I disliked the creature design. I didn't care much for what happens in that film. I don't remember it that much, hashtag on brand, but I don't remember anything really to go back and watch about that film. It announced a new director. It announced kind of the presence of someone that would be able to kind of take the reins of some genre material and either, you know, have some kind of measured success with the Planet of the Apes series, whether you like it or not. Those films do make money. And, second movie I absolutely adored from beginning to end. Again, I do not like the creature design. I don't know if that's a spoiler, but fuck it, whatever. Like, I don't like the creature design in that film. I do really, really enjoy that film. I think it works from beginning to end. I don't even have an issue with the end. I love it from top to bottom. I own that fucking thing. Like, I don't buy very many movies, but that one was just such a, like Michael was saying, it has no right to be as good as it is. And I think obviously the performances are are elevating it, but honestly, like, that script is really, really tight, and it's, and it makes you think, and it makes you kind of ponder, like, the premise and everything like that. So these films, not even like the first film, but this film and the second film all have kind of like this interesting nugget of an idea. And like you were mentioning, Brian, like right from the outset, you're just like, okay, cool. They turn on this God particle machine and then boom. And then all of a sudden they're in, where the fuck are they? Like, what the hell happened? Did Earth disappear? Did they disappear? Are they like, what the hell's going on in this movie? And so it's got a great premise that kind of locks you in. And this film has a lot of fun in a lot of ways. Chris O'Dowd is absolutely perfect throughout this entire film. I couldn't love him more. And I enjoyed the setup, but boy, did they just completely eat dirt during the execution of this. It is not executed well. I don't read into films while I'm watching them very often. I'm not the kind of person that will be, you know, after a fairly predictable movie, I won't be that person that's like, oh yeah, I saw that turn coming a mile away. Like, I just, films slap me upside the head. They just have a habit of doing that. And I read every twist and turn in this movie, and I was pretty frustrated by that, because I know if I could read it, I know there's so many other people that are just like, oh my God, this movie. I think, again, the ideas are good. I just worry about the execution. I think they spend too much time in different aspects that they're trying to mine emotional weight from, that it just doesn't have any real kind of reason to be here. I've been watching a lot of the Great British Baking Show lately, and they mention hilariously a lot during the second season about their pastries having a soggy bottom and how bad that is. And this film has a very soggy bottom.
So what you're saying is Doc Hollywood should be in this movie.
I just, like, I don't feel like I can do a food metaphor anymore during this particular episode, because you just like wandered in with a Great British Baking Show reference and then said that this movie had a soggy bottom. Where do I even go from there?
You got upstaged.
Yeah. Okay, by the way, I looked up that Little White Lies article, and this is what I was talking about. Quote, during the hunt for Cloverfield clues, many speculated that another website, EthanHaasWasRight.com, bore some connection to the film. However, jumping down a bit, it turned out to be part of a separate ARG for Mindstorm Labs' role-playing game, Alpha Omega, The Beginning and the End. But yeah,
wow, that's amazing.
I definitely spent a lot of time on that site assuming that it was part of Cloverfield. So, like, here's my thing. I loved the first Cloverfield. The movie itself was very good. I loved it. I mean, it was, you know, sitting there in that theater not knowing what the hell's going on, and it's like this weird found footage monster movie from like a ground level. I found it really compelling, and I found more than anything the thought put into the creature and its place in its environment and everything about it like very interesting, because it wasn't like a malevolent being that was trying to do something. Like, you before I even read it, I had this feeling that it was like a baby. It was like a fawn or like a deer that was gangly and running around and scared and didn't know what was going on. And then in addition to that, it's dropping these weird dog-sized lice that are like attacking people too. So it's like got a secondary danger that to it is just like a tick or something. And so I found that super interesting, and I was like, I can't wait to see where this goes. Like, are there more of them? Is this one still alive and it grows up and like people are hunting it? And then like there was never a sequel, and I was kind of fine with it. And then 10 Cloverfield Lane came out, and I was like, oh, this is it. This is like they're gonna do more, or this is gonna be like a similar story, like maybe there was a whole other creature that came up at the same time. And then it had like nothing to do with it. And I remember being furious at that. And this movie has dispelled that fury. the 10 Cloverfield Lane. I even remember at the time, I said, this is a very good movie. It's tense. It's interesting. There's a lot of good performances. The direction is really great. The sound design is overbearing in a good way. And the score is really good. Mm-hmm. But I just can't get over the fact that they called it Cloverfield. Because, like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And now this movie, I think, attempts to... It's as though an evil genie heard me on that podcast and
is
said,
this what you want, Brian?
Oh, this is what you want, is it? And I'm just like, no, evil genie, no, because this movie is not well directed. The score is not good. The performances are universally terrible, which is
it
crazy
is the same composer, though.
Yeah, I know, that's the weird part, but I think that that's like, it's one of those things where it's like, if you don't have much to work with, you can only do so much. And sure. So the composer's just probably standing at the working print and just being like, well, there's no tone. There's no atmosphere. I guess I'll just bang some strings together and hope for the best. Though I will say that, like, there's
I'm sure
scenes...
that's what he does on The Walking Dead, too.
Yeah, pretty much. But, like, you know, he's doing the Lord's work. You know, God loves a trier, but, like, he can't overcome the fact that this is a cheap, cheap-looking, poorly paced, just mess of a movie. And when you're wasting the talents of so many great performers who rarely get to be the leads in a movie that is this big and this bold. And it's just like the
Goo-goo.
Whole thing. Yeah. I mean, John Ortiz.
Come on, guys. Her name makes me laugh, like, regardless. Like, every time y'all say her name, I'm just like, ha. Ah.
I just think about people named, like, Willie, and I just, like, you know, I would rather be named Goo-goo. Like, every culture's got, like, shitty names. And sure. I think that Goo-goo Mbatha Raw is probably not shitty when you get down to it.
The full name is pretty cool, but... But that as a first name, you know.
All right. I will say, you know, coming hot on our heels, this guy named Axel. Like, you can't deny Axel's a great name. And then you've got the boring one, Elizabeth. Come on. What was I going to say? This movie is terrible.
I don't know.
This movie is fucking garbage. I kept trying to, like, even at the opening, like, the... This movie does a really dumb thing where it's got an opening where everyone is, like, stuck in traffic on, like, a very small road that looks like it's in, like, the outlying suburbs of a major city. And I was like, is this a gas line? Is it just, like, that there was an accident? Or, like, are the street lights out? Like, but they should still be moving. But before they even show you that and then give you the god-awful exposition that comes with it, they have one of those openings that has, like, a lot of radio news clips to, like, fill you in on the world. And I was just like, okay, so I've got it. And then the guy's like, well, you know, we're running out of energy. You should go up into the space station and try to help. And she's like, oh, I don't know. I mean, you and me are down here and they're up there and it could be years. And I'm like, wow, I feel like I just heard radio shows telling me all this already. And then they kind of have the same conversation again when she calls him and he's like, man, 2 years is way too long without you. And I'm like, I fucking know.
This is the thing. You should be, this is meant for people half watching it. Like,
but that's
the only explanation.
and then there's this crazier thing that's happening where, so, the movie begins a little bit like Sunshine. You know, a bunch of people in a rotating space thing.
Are we just straight up talking about it now?
I'm talking about the beginning still.
Okay. I was just wondering because we're getting real detailed.
I'm skipping past my basic thoughts. My basic thoughts can be summed up by, fuck this movie, this is trash. The last 30 seconds are the most insulting thing I've ever seen on screen. And I cannot imagine a movie being... at once, like, more disappointing, but also, like, within 10 minutes I should have known better. But, like, for some reason I kept kind of trying to grasp for hope, and it just didn't work. And this movie is a colossal disappointment. And I feel like if I... So Duncan Jones has a movie coming out on Netflix. It's Mute. And I loved...
Yes.
I loved Moon. I really liked Source Code. And I am one of the people who defended and gave a fresh review to Warcraft.
Woo! Yeah, like, half of that movie is fucking good. Half of that movie is fucking good.
Everything like, with like, Ben Foster in it is amazing.
Oh, no, Brian. No.
Evil wizard Ben Foster, I guess spoilers for Warcraft, is great.
He's on meth in that movie.
As
he
any
is,
good
he
wizard
is.
Should be.
There are ideas in that movie. Like, if we want to talk about a movie with not great execution, but a lot of ideas and interesting ways to, like, that movie, like, even understands how, like, strategy games work. Like, there's ideas in that movie.
Well, here's the thing. That movie has the opposite problem of the Cloverfield Paradox, because that movie doesn't give a shit if you're paying attention. But anyway, the point I was making is that Duncan Jones has his new movie Mute coming out on Netflix, and Netflix also purchased Alex Garland, who wrote Sunshine, oddly enough, as well as 28 Days Later and directed Ex Machina. It's got his new movie, Annihilation, for most of the world. And, like, from now on, all after this movie in particular, all I can think whenever I hear, like, this movie's going to be bought by Netflix or is going to Netflix, my now initial reaction is going to be, oh, shit, I really wanted that to be good.
Yeah.
Like, they've always been kind of the DTV, the direct-to-video, direct-to-VHS, direct-to-DVD, like, equivalent. You know, you could find those crappy movies, but they seemed for a while to be like, no, we're trying to get some prestige. Look, we made this documentary about the riots in Egypt and, you know, we got Mudbound. But now it's just like, oh, God, it went to Netflix. Shit, it's going to be another Cloverfield Paradox. And like that, this is a exercise.
They missed on... Bright? Why do I keep I keep fucking forgetting names of movies that I want to talk about. The slavery movie that came out last year.
Oh, that was 2 years ago. That was Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, and they tried to buy it at Sundance, and Birth of the Nation was like, "Nah,
no,
we'll pass."
yeah.
Like how'd
theaters.
That work out for y'all?
Well, I think I want to say briefly. I think what it is more so, I mean, Netflix doesn't do a good job. Let's be honest about that. But it's the fact that they're so dishonest about this stuff.
Let me do one thing here, because we shit on Netflix a lot. I will say this. They did about as good of a job marketing this film as they possibly could have.
Yeah.
Under the restriction that NBC was not going to let them say that the movie was being released right after the Super Bowl, because, you know, contractual obligations were basically like, no, we have a top show that's going to be airing after the Super Bowl. We don't want you to steal its thunder. So we're not going to let you say it's right after the Super Bowl. So they got away with kind of saying it's right after the Super Bowl in coded language. But B, as soon as I went on the Netflix channel, it locked me. It locked me into watching that fucking trailer, and it was like, "Yo, this is what you came here for, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, but like, can I just start watching it now?" And like, I pressed buttons on my remote, and it wasn't moving anything. And I was like, "I guess I'm gonna watch this fucking trailer again
for
right.
this movie that I want to see."
yeah,
that
so,
reminds me of
so
when there was a car
a
commercial
good job
before, like
of
one
that.
Of the Fast and Furious movies. And these people behind me, because the car commercial was like, you know, coming this summer, The Fast and the Furious featuring Dodge Challenger and blah, blah, blah. And the people behind me were like, isn't this the movie that we're trying to fucking see right now?
Yeah. That shit bugs me. Cause yeah, I think there was like a trailer in front of Captain America Civil War that was like a Audi commercial, and it was showing clips of Captain America Civil War ahead of me watching Captain America Civil War, and I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? This is some weird shit. So yeah. They do that goofy shit all the time.
But I mean, like, I don't know. Like I said, I think this is like a brand killing exercise for Netflix, because like, this is just not
we'll
a great
see.
Movie.
We'll see.
This is, like to make the, like, I don't understand Netflix.
Look, if Bright can't kill Netflix, nothing can kill Netflix, right? Netflix is the cockroach of the online streaming world. That's it is true. Strong. Everything we do seems to make it stronger. As soon as you turn on the light, you see them. but when you turn off the light, you might hear them scurrying about, but you just know they're still around. So, yeah.
Netflix is a poltergeist that is haunting all of our houses. So let's talk about this movie just sure. in terms of what makes it suck so much. it's cheap looking. Like, am I alone in thinking that?
No, I think it looks pretty good. I think you see, is it $40 million looking good? I don't even know what the hell. I don't know what a budget for a movie even entails anymore. Like, all of this money just blows my mind that an Avengers movie costs $250 million and, you know, to market it and put it overseas and all that shit costs $500 million. All of that just blows my mind. I don't understand where any of that money goes.
You know, here's my problem, Bill, is that, like, the sets are whatever. You know, they're just kind of plain, which is fine. But, like, I don't think there's
any production design behind it. But like, I think it looks good.
In my head, that makes it look cheap. They're just like, we found a warehouse. We're going to put up a couple of panels here and there. Like, when they open a panel... because they hear screaming behind it. It looked like bad. It looked like a public access television show that's like, well, we got to have a person working on the ducts in this scene. It's like, all right, we'll just put some hoses in there.
If you've ever watched like early season Doctor Who's, it kind of reminds me a little bit of that.
Black
like,
and white?
Like some
or-
of the... No.
Like Eccleston and
Eccleston. Yeah, yeah. Where the production quality is like is there, but it does look a little. It looks like you can't look beyond what you're actually looking at. Does that make any sense?
It doesn't exist outside of that set.
I think the problem with it. I don't like how it looks. I don't think cheap is necessarily the right word. I think that there is something to be said about that there isn't a world beyond that, but I think it's that production and art design that feels slick, but like doesn't have any personality or charm. Like that's why I'd hesitate to compare it with, you know, like with early Tennant or Eccleston, which like, yeah, sometimes I was like, hey, that doesn't look great. But like, I feel a warmth and a sense of tactility in early Doctor Who that is not here at all. Because even when you think about the space station, we've seen a lot of fucking space stations in movies. Yeah. And this is like,
especially lately.
Sure. But like this space station is like this incredibly tedious middle ground between like industrial, like utilitarianism and like really bland idea of what you think like futuristic should be. Like it's like as indecisive as the rest of the movie. Like there's no sense of like real identity to this place other than like it's supposed to be set in the near future just because.
It's in a low Earth orbit and it's got a bridge that looks like, I mean, this is another one of the problems is that like these people have been on this thing for like 2 years and it looks like they just showed up yesterday. Like there's no sense of it being lived in, and that just again creates that sensation of like
they do some exposition dump of trying to wipe through that, but yeah, I agree, Brian.
Yeah, the
I
guy's like, I've
agree.
You know been keeping it up, and it's never had a problem. But sure. Like you know, no one hung a picture. Like no one's like they didn't paint a wall in some way. Like it feels off. And like I think about the
it looks like Trump's desk of the White House.
Yeah, I'm working hard. There's nothing on my desk, but I'm working hard. And that's just like the kind of thing. Like you would expect that Schmidt, Brühl's character, not the guy from New Girl, that he would have like that someone would walk into his room to talk to him, and he'd have like the yarn wall where he's just like feverishly trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
You never get anything with these people's lives.
Yeah. And this is like
at the fucking least a chalkboard or something. Yeah.
Right. Sure. Instead, every once in a while he pulls out like a translucent tray and looks at it like it's a tablet from like the mainframe of the particle accelerator, which is again super lazy sci-fi. But like the opening of Sunshine is Kappa doing his little video thing that kind of helps with the exposition. And then the second that he's done with it, like, there's a fucking fight because he took too long and now everyone else can't send their messages. And Captain America's mad at him. And, like, it sets up
I forgot he's in that movie.
What was that?
I said I forgot he's in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sunshine is just fucking littered with people. Man, a fucking movie.
That is a great movie. But, like, it immediately sets up what this place is, what everything's purpose is, how the stress that these people have felt together. Mm. And everyone in this movie feels just completely absent of character. Like, Volkov gets in a fight with Schmidt because he's like, I think you're just, like, trying to keep everything. You're trying to starve Mother Russia. And Schmidt's like, I would never do that. And then they get into a fight and everyone's like, hey, guys, cool it. We got to run another test. And it's like, oh, okay. And it's just like, you know, it's in Sunshine, they had, like, the whole, you know, med bay. Like, you got to spend, like, 2 hours in the Earth simulator to, like, get your fucking mind right, man, because we've been in space too long. And in this movie, it's just like, guys, come on, cool it. We have to do a thing. Oh, okay.
There's no intimation of a history.
One more time.
Between any of them. Like, I have no idea if anyone is friends. Like, it literally, other than the actors, the only thing that differentiates these people is what flag they have on the side of their jacket. Yeah.
And, like, John Ortiz says a prayer, and that's he's the religious guy, and everyone else is not the religious guy.
I think one of the only things that we really get that kind of tells us that these people have spent a long time around each other is the fact that, and I don't want to say that they wouldn't have picked people that could speak each other's languages, like that wouldn't have been something that they would have looked for, but it feels like the reason they can speak each other's language is because they spent so much time around each other. Does that make sense?
Done it, like, through osmosis, like in the 13th Warrior. Like,
I guess so, sure.
Schmidt,
yeah, something like that.
Is like, you know, I didn't even speak Mandarin before I came onto this craft.
Yeah,
I would,
like,
say that, like,
I don't know, like,
that's sort,
like,
of
that feels like a little detail, because, like, we never really get an explanation for why some can and some can't, right? Because sometimes during this movie they speak to each other in another language, kind of as hidden language, right? So not everybody speaks each other's languages. All of the languages of
Volkov,
the people on board,
never figured out how to speak Chinese. But most other people seem like they might have. And Zhang Ziyi's character Tam definitely knows how to speak English.
Yeah,
I would say that the only, like, you know, Michael, you hit on something very true. Like, I don't want to keep bringing up Sunshine, but in Sunshine, there's very clearly, like, deeper, like, you know, everyone's on the same team, but some people are better friends. Rose Byrne and Cillian Murphy are definitely, like, the closest of friends. And in this movie, they kind of try to do that with Tam and Schmidt, where I think we're supposed to understand that they have a romance, but, like,
yeah, something,
just,
something's
just
there.
Fucking let him kiss or something. Like,
sure.
Don't just have them have one conversation and then him refusing to hand over a wrench immediately. Especially don't follow it up when Volkov then brings a 3D printed gun in and is like, I'm an angry Russian guy. I don't trust either of you motherfuckers.
It's those scenes that, like, point to, like, this sometimes feels like a TV show. Like there's something so odd about so many of these choices that, you know, I mean, I obviously don't expect this to be 3 hours or anything, but there are a lot of things that I think Jordan actually said this feels a lot like a failed pilot.
It's funny because I don't know if I've read a couple of reviews of this, this movie today. He definitely says it feels like a failed pilot. Is he also at some point said that it felt like it was the season finale and you missed the rest of the season? It was either him or someone else who said that, and I was just like, it's amazing that both of those things are necessarily true. It's like, this is the season finale that's like a backdoor pilot to something else, and I don't like either of them. And it's just kind of crazy. And another problem is, in a space movie, there's a rhythm. There is catastrophe, then there's quiet, and then there's hope, and then there's usually another catastrophe, because you need those quiet moments where everything seems at least sort of okay to, like, give a sense of pacing and time and to let everything sink in. But sure. I swear to God, this movie feels like it happens in real time.
Yeah, there is a lot of like boom, 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 boom. Shit just goes wrong and wrong and wrong really quick. And mm-hmm. yeah, especially towards the end, shit just unravels. Like when someone first dies in this movie, that like kicks everything off and all of a sudden everything starts to happen. And you're just like, whoa, can this movie take a breath for a second?
Well,
like,
here's the to that point, Bill, there's a moment where I'm just going to rush through some plot real fast. Everyone here's screaming and they find Elizabeth Debicki trapped in a wall with like pipes and stuff going through her, which is
that was kind of cool. That was cool. Yeah.
That made me think of the Philadelphia experiment, if anyone is aware of it.
Did anyone else?
You go.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm tired of this verbal back and forth.
did anyone else think that that was definitely a creature and not a person at first?
Oh, yeah.
Because I definitely thought that was a creature. And then when Tam like points at the wall and is like, it's in there, I'm like, what are we even discussing here? Why are we opening that thing? And then I hear it again and I'm like, oh, that does kind of sound like a person. Like, I was just like, no, this is definitely like one of those Cloverfield creatures. Like, what are y'all doing?
I thought
like,
it was gonna be an alien. So what was I going to say? So they find her and they pull her out and it's like the Philadelphia experiment. Here's Brian Rowan's conspiracy minute. The Philadelphia experiment is a conspiracy theory that revolves around the fact that the U.S. Navy tried to create a cloaking device for a ship that apparently transported it from Virginia to North Carolina. And when it reappeared after that transported teleportation thing, the seamen were stuck in the bulkheads and dying, and some of them were missing and some of them had aged. Yeah. Look it up. Really weird.
Interesting.
So that's that reminded me of that. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like it. And also, who the fuck is this woman? And she has like wires going through her legs and her wrist and a fucking full-on metal bar going through her shoulder. And every time we cut back to her, she is just like another 40% towards becoming a supermodel. And I'm just like, how is she fine?
She's like at a spa.
How is she okay? She like is standing up and she's like, oh, hey, what's up? By the way, I know you. You don't know me, though, apparently. I guess we're from different dimensions. By the way, don't trust Schmidt. Schmidt's a spy. Everyone's like, oh, shit. So they go. They find Schmidt's transmissions to the German intelligence agency. David Oyelowo wails on him, throws him into an airlock, and is like, you're stuck here now, motherfucker, because we don't trust you. And then how does he get out?
I thought the hand, maybe.
The hand doesn't, like, I was paying attention to that sequence and I was wondering how the hell that does not seem like a location where like someone should just be able to get locked in. That seems like a very weird place. Like, I was expecting somewhere like off of the
junction.
It seemed like just like a random corridor that, like, yeah, they had like one wall over here and one wall over here, and this one slides open to my command and I'm gonna lock it, and now you're locked inside. And like, I was like
in a submarine, how like between compartments there will be like a dead area that still has locked doors on either side of it. And so it's like if you trap someone in your foyer of your house
And just lock the doors on either side. And it's just like, you're stuck here. And I'm just like, that feels really weird. Are you going to let anybody else know that he's stuck there? Or is someone else going to just like casually wander by and be like, oh, doctor, like, what are you doing in here? Sorry about that.
But so then, however he does, he gets out. And then he like sees Chris O'Dowd's disembodied arm crawling around.
Which is amazing. Great, like, it looks good. They have a lot of fun with it. I think it looks pretty good.
I think it varies as to whether or not it looks good, because like when he's in the bulkhead, sort of when he first pulls it out and then they show the stump, I'm like, all right, yeah, I guess that's good enough, you know. This is a very unearthly wound. It doesn't have to look totally normal. Sure. And then the hand, though, like, it's really shot to shot.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I do want to mention, and I do want to praise, because I don't want to just rip this thing to shreds as much as I do, because I think there are some clever sequences, and when Chris O'Dowd is being like thrown around that wall, when he first like loses his wrist inside of it, I was like, whoa, what is this? And then it just ups it to 11, and I was like, okay. This is a lot of fun, and he's really playing it up. Like, it was hilarious because he starts yelling, and all of a sudden they kind of like run up on him, and you can see by the angle that they're at, they're just like, "What are you doing, dude?" And then they roll over like, to the other side. Yeah, and then they're like, "Oh, your hand is inside of there. That's weird."
See, I don't know. I can't even praise that. I
had
think
a problem
that
with that
scene
only because there is a scene in the IT Crowd, which if people don't know is kind of his breakout from the BBC, where he goes to deathclock.com and finds out that he's going to die like tomorrow. And he also at the same time has to go to his boss's funeral while concurrently he has asked Moss to turn up the vibration setting on his phone. And the vibration is so hard that it makes him believe he is having a heart attack. And he starts screaming, "I'm fucking dying. I'm not fucking joking. Call an ambulance. Call an ambulance." And he plays that with more true terror than he does this Agreed. Moment in the Cloverfield Paradox.
Okay.
Well, it's like that scene, even like, Brian, so I want to go back a little bit to what you were saying about pacing, in the sense that like all of this stuff happens in real time. I know we got a little distracted, but I think there's something fundamental about why this movie doesn't work for me as either like a B movie then or a horror film in that idea. Cause like, I mean, I think that they're like, I think specifically, it's not great that I just watched The Thing, which is a masterpiece and this movie misunderstands pretty much everything that makes The Thing great. Like the very fact that, as you're saying, Brian, that so many things happen incidents happen in a row and that you don't get a sense to breathe. You don't get a sense, like if people are paranoid, it just kind of happens. Like, it's like, oh, that person has a gun now. Okay. All right.
Yeah, Volkov goes nuts without a real reason. And then what I was going to say is David Oyelowo, when Daniel Brühl's like, "You guys got to come here," and David Oyelowo is just like, "How did you go out?" And he's like, "There's no time to explain. Just come here." And everyone's just like, "Okay, sure." Yeah, the guy who we think is trying to sabotage everything so his country can invade Russia has said that every member of the crew should come to his position and will not explain himself. This is fine. And also, then they find the arm, and everything is forgiven.
There's then a long sequence where they need to go decouple the maintenance deck or something, which then there's that great line where I felt like I missed something, where he's like, I need to do it by myself, and she's like, "You know, we can do it remotely," and he's like, "No, I need to do this for my crew." And it was like, wait, why?
I was like, is she lying to him? Like, I usually in a movie like this, you would have that scene and they'd be like, "We can't do it remotely because the lines have fried or there's a coupling malfunction." And he's just like, "Yeah, that sounds like a lot of work."
I was like, what?
I didn't
Look,
hear
a guy
her
vomited
say that,
up worms. So, you know, another guy lost his arm. I'm pretty cool with dying this way.
I think we're safely in spoiler territory by this
point.
Yeah,
we could get. I mean,
we jumped real far ahead.
We're nitpicking so hard. I would say that, like, yeah, it's just a complete and utter failure of a movie, and I don't know that anything could have been done to fix it. And I really like, if you're an aspiring screenwriter, here's a little thing for you. You either need to have a giant bad thing happen immediately, and then examine the fallout for a long time before you have another bad thing happen. Or if you really want it to be one thing after another, you have to do some real hardcore character work up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you can have the last 40 minutes of your film be a fucking bloodbath. But, like,
you think of something like Green Room.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect example. Green Room. You know, so much good character work, and then everything goes to shit. And then Green Room then does even better because it'll have a moment of startling violence, and then everyone has to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you keep a person locked in with what the characters are going through. Because there was a point in this movie where someone was like, you're spoilers, we're in spoilers now, your children are still alive down on that earth. And I was just like, is that a thing that we knew? Because this woman has only talked to her husband very briefly. Yeah. And, oh God, we haven't even talked about the fact that the husband is on Earth and we're watching his bullshit.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That whole thing, he is just like, they shot him out in like 2 days.
That's in post. Like, like straight up.
So here's, yeah. So let's talk about the Cloverfield of it all. We're in spoilers now. We can really get into what makes this movie not just bad, but like offensive to me. So everything that has to do with Cloverfield is something that could have been added in post and not artfully. It, like, there's the insert shot of a Slusho bobblehead.
Yeah.
There is a TV program wherein Donald Logue plays an Alex Jonesian type figure who is saying, like, you know, they're up there. They're trying to create a clean burning, like an everlasting energy. But people who have accepted that the Cloverfield paradox is real, they know that this could, the reason they have it up there is because it's too dangerous and it could lead to the destruction of our entire world. Every time they fire it, they risk ripping open the fabric of the universe. They could release demons. Demons, monsters, creature from the sea. And I'm like, what? Is that really how they're going to tie this all together? Is that a creature from the sea was just unleashed because of a particle beam? Like,
I guess. But apparently, timeline doesn't work with a lot of this stuff. Like, I was reading briefly about this. Like, when you think of the pod going in the water in Cloverfield, like, that timeline doesn't match
up. I don't think that that's the pod. I think that that's just something else completely. Like, this movie, Donald Logue's purpose in this movie is to be the guy who makes it quote unquote make sense. But in the same way that, like, I could make the ending of Manchester by the Sea suddenly tie into Indiana Jones and the Avengers by having Casey Affleck standing looking forlorn out at the water and being like, you know, I just, like, you know, there used to be this guy named Indiana Jones who was an archaeologist. And I just know, I can feel it in my blood that, like, something's coming, and maybe, like, you know, some people will come to avenge us from an alien attack that's coming. And it's just like, okay, that doesn't mean you did work. That doesn't mean you actually explained it. You just had a guy come in and spout some nonsense that the Reddit, you know, Easter egg hunting fanboys will be like, aha, it makes sense now. It's like, it doesn't make sense. It's not sensical. Well, it's still just as dumb, but now you have the dialogue that you need to create your own personal yarn wall. And it's just, it's just annoying. It's not well deployed.
I will say this, if you try and poke holes at it, like, this not lining up and connecting, like Mike was briefly trying to do, all people have to do is say, no, this is a different timeline. So
yeah, this is a different reality. I mean,
yeah, so match up perfectly.
Right. They go to another reality where their ship broke apart and fell into the ocean and everyone's at war and has been for years. And then Donald Logue again says, it could affect, like, the past and the future. And so, like, oh, 2008. Yeah, that's the thing that came out of the water, which, again, destroys what I loved so much about the first Cloverfield. Mm-hmm. Was this concept of, it's just like an animal that's on the loose, and it's just annoying. It's annoying as shit, but not as annoying as the last shot, which I still don't want to get to because I've got a lot of hate that I need to throw at it. And, well, I feel like there's other stuff we should talk about first.
Can I ask a question? Because I really don't understand something.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Two questions. Why?
Every time Michael pauses, his brain creates another question.
Why does the particle accelerator, which has... See, I don't know, it seemed to explode or, you know, it seemed to be heavily damaged. Why does it just randomly start to work at the end of the movie?
They vented the condensation.
Because of moisture. Yeah, the moisture.
Okay.
I really don't.
All right.
I don't have an answer for you. It's funny that I'm sorry, what? Bill, you broke up a bit. Can you say that again?
Yes. Okay. So, if we look at the design of the ship, at one end of the ship is the particle accelerator. At the other end is everything else. That's just kind of like maintenance bay and eat living space and everything else. So the middle of that ship kind of like breaks apart, but the particle accelerator, for all intents and purposes, does not seem to be actually affected. Now, when Tam dies and that water like briefly boils and then it freezes, she seemed pretty damn close to the particle accelerator at that point. So I'm not quite sure why.
Doing?
I think she was working on the moisture issue, but again, they show another sequence where Daniel Brühl like evaporates or like expels moisture out of some chamber, and I'm like, wait, didn't you just get rid of all the moisture? Like, that seemed like a whole lot of water.
Not only that, but why would it vent out? Wouldn't it just freeze in place like all the water that Ziyi Zhang was in?
I don't know. That's too much science for me, man.
Wasn't there also an oxygen issue that seemed to just disappear?
The oxygen, every once in a while, to add a little dash of what someone might consider suspense, they talk about how much oxygen they have left. And they just throw out a percentage.
Okay.
Yeah, they said something like they had like two hours left to then reboot the system and then get the O2 back on, like the O2 creators back on.
Why
so
did Chris O'Dowd's room fill with oxygen? See, here's the thing. I'm going to talk about
because
sunshine
he turned
again.
It off.
Get ready.
Because he turned off the scrubber, and so it was just pure oxygen
so
inside
it was just
of there.
Filling
now,
that one particular room, because it's like if you took the vent out of or the filter out of your air conditioning system.
You turned
system.
Off the pumps.
Gotcha.
No, you just turned off the pumps. So it wasn't pumping the O2 throughout the entire space station anymore.
So it was backing
it was just
up into his place.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha, I guess. But like, so...
Science explained by Bill. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, how far we've fallen. So like, in Sunshine, sorry to bring up Sunshine again, but in Sunshine, there's a point where the oxygen garden is lit on fire, and they're like, well, that's how we were going to get more oxygen. So we have to run the calculation of how much we have left, and how many people that can sustain. And then, like, they go through all the math. Mm-hmm. And they make it very clear that one of them has to die in order for them to have enough to complete their mission. And it's a really fucked up and intense scene. And then it becomes a plot point later on when, spoilers for Sunshine, you realize that they're losing oxygen faster than they should. Oh my god, they have another person on board. And in this movie, they're just like, we're at 76% oxygen. We're at 46% oxygen. It's like, well, what does that mean, though? Like, are you losing it? Are you losing it faster than you can create it? Or is your production down and now you're just on fumes? Because at the same time, they're like, we just have to go to the oxygen room and fill it with oxygen so that Chris O'Dowd can die. And then everything will be fine.
They do an exceptionally terrible job of spatially and within dialogue and within exposition in making anyone understand what any person is doing as far as like processes within the ship. Like it is unbelievable how much I don't know what was like. I can't even pretend to tell you what they were doing for 90% of that movie.
I don't know
at their
where
various
their
consoles
like. Like command console is in relation to everything else. They call it, I think, the X deck. And it really seems like the foosball table is right behind that, but it's not, it's in a different place. And I don't know if it's by the bagel machine or not, which is also a gun machine. I mean, this is the future I want to live in, where I can either have a low quality bagel or a very dumb looking gun.
Wait, I realized I had one other question I want to briefly address. Okay, so the particle accelerator, Earlier in the film, they say something like, Daniel Brühl's character says something like, we need quantum disentanglement, believes that if we use the particle accelerator again, we'll go back to our universe. So, what is Jensen trying to do? How is she trying to use it? Like, she seems to want to take it for her universe, but by virtue of using it, wouldn't she send it to another dimension?
I think, okay, here is what...
Am I misunderstanding?
No. You are not misunderstanding it, but you have your systems are not aligned correctly. So what Schmidt is saying is, we got to make the same mistake again to get back to where we came from. But then I know how to fix it so it'll finally work once we're back.
Those were two different things? It was messed up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah, that's what caused them to go into the different dimension was that there was too much moisture. And that's what Tam had figured out. And so he realized, if I kick out the moisture, then I can get this thing. Because remember, it was working and then it failed.
Right.
And so they were just on the cusp of it, like, stabilizing. So Tam realized it was the moisture that they weren't accounting for. And so if you expel the moisture, then it stabilizes. So he was basically going to run the same thing, keep the moisture in,
and then expel the moisture,
go back, and then expel the moisture. And now we have a stable system.
Now, as to your first question, Michael, Jensen, Elizabeth Debicki, looking fabulous in an armored space suit and holding a toy gun.
I think Jordan said this was a great audition for a Metroid movie.
Oh my God, is it ever?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Jordan Rapp's review of this movie, pretty spot on with many good statements. So what I would say is she's going around just gut shooting motherfuckers to try to get the ignition keys for the particle accelerator. She's
trying on that motherfucker
in her dimension, because in her dimension, the Cloverfield station has been destroyed.
Sure.
And so she's like, they keep saying, we'll give you the plans. You can go home and build a new one that will work. And she's all like, nah, bitch, I'm going to take this one and bring it back. But my problem with that plan is that the purpose of the space station was never to produce power. It was just to prove that it was possible. So her taking the space station back would in no way change the fact that her world would still have to build a new one.
At least they don't have a Cloverfield monster, though.
Not the one. Well, no, we did hear the news report. So.
Sure.
They didn't appear to have.
Yeah. She does mention to Moo Moo, Gugu. Gugu that yes, that it would take too long to build for them to like have a stable government. And in the middle of war, are you going to have any of those governments able to like focus their scientists and everything like that and their resources on creating this energy source that maybe
made the atom bomb, you know, so
but that was also while we were not directly in war. We were developing that before, right? Anyways,
before, during, and after.
Yes.
It's
and
been
so
a bad project.
I think what she's basically saying is, if I bring them this technology, the war over energy will maybe not end, because I can't imagine them just landing with one of these fucking things and they're like, we solved it, and then it's just a war over that thing, right? Because then it's just the atom bomb all over. It's just a mad rush to try and get that piece of technology and figure it out. But I think what she's basically saying is, I don't want to take any more time. I want to just take this thing that's working functional now and just bring it down there. And then hopefully we can make do
but
with
you
something.
You couldn't bring it down. Like, the Earth's atmosphere would rip this motherfucker apart.
It certainly is, in the state of that space station as it is, certainly. Yeah, I don't think that
ever was designed for reentry. Like, that's just sure. I mean, that's just my two cents. It doesn't matter, because as we all know, there is no outer space. we're on a flat earth beneath a firmament.
Oh boy. Okay. Pizza.
So,
oh my God.
I just love bringing up the flat earth theory because it makes Michael really upset.
her whole like justification for turning on them is not very good. I will admit that. I can't explain that away with science. Like, no, I was very confused by that as well. I was just like, why she gotta be so mean, man?
Well, let's talk
why
about
she gotta be so mean.
Let's just talk about another fucking dumb thing. So Gugu Mbatha-Raw, first of all, her character's name is Hamilton, and I have had Alexander Hamilton stuck in my head the entire day.
as soon as I saw Hamilton, I was like, oh. Alexander
I was like,
Hamilton?
Okay. Do you mean Alexander Hamilton? Anyway, and I nearly started this podcast with that song. But I don't think I would have been able to turn it off after I started, so I decided to go in a different direction. Anyway, she finds out that her family on Earth 2, let's call it Earth 2, where Elizabeth Debicki is from.
Another Earth?
Yes. Thank you.
No,
Michael.
Stop. Stop, Jesus.
I've got a game for us to play when we wrap all this up. So she finds out that her children are still alive. And because apparently she killed her family, Casey Affleck style, when she installed a power pod in her house that was
It was sucking energy. It was sucking energy off of like the power grid, I guess, illegally.
Because her kids were fucking crybabies and wanted to have lights at night.
So and, they died.
Yeah.
So they died for their sin of envy and greed. We just got dark. Anyway, her fucking kids die. And she's really upset about it. We find out like an hour and a half into the movie. And and then Elizabeth Debicki's like, oh, your kids are still alive on Earth 2. And she's like, oh, shit, I'm going to go to Earth 2. And the captain is rightly like, those aren't your fucking kids, lady. Yeah. You've got a husband back on Earth Prime. And she's like, I have to go to warn them not to do the dumb thing that I did because I know that other me is totally going to do that thing. And he's like, well, you're right. I'll let you go. And I was just like, it was the first time in the movie that anyone had said anything that made sense. And so, of course, he abandoned it immediately. And then we cut to her husband, who is traveling with a little girl that he found in a pile of rubble. Let's take a 2 minute sidebar to talk about how dumb this is. He is like, I'm going to go to the hospital. And then he goes to some rubble and he sees a crying girl in it. And he's like, fuck the hospital. I'm going to go to my friend's bomb shelter that he's not using.
No, don't do that. Picks up the little girl and is back on his way to the hospital. He gets a text message saying, stop, don't come to the hospital. It's destroyed, which is kind of like, he should send question mark. Like what? And then
just gonna respond with the good old double question mark.
Yeah. So while he's on the road, she's like, you shouldn't be texting and driving. And he's like, this is kind of an emergency. And he asks his friend, hey, can I stay at your shelter? And they're like, I guess they're like, yeah, cool. And so we flash forward to a 10 Cloverfield Lane style shelter where it's like self-sustaining and like
the one in 10 Cloverfield Lane was nicer.
Yes.
I'll say
yeah. no doubt. It had a shower. All right.
It had a giant vat of acid that you could dispose of a body in.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Was that even nominated for best disposal of a body? We weren't doing the stages that year, were we?
I thought it was.
I think it might have been actually. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I think that's the year I came on actually.
Yeah.
Just
anyway,
later.
So he's there and he sends her a message and he's like, I guess this is supposed to be like irony or supposed to raise some suspense, because he's like, hey, when we got cut off earlier, what I meant to say was we should try to have another baby, which is apparently she's like not even thinking about that, because she's like, my husband will be fine, but my husband and my other me and my other me's children need me to stop them from installing a bad crock pot. And and again, like, just people are down for it. And then she like almost stays in the escape pod even when she realizes that Debicki is like gonna fucking murder everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has a real moment, and I'm like, oh, is the pod, like, already set that, like, it will be gone and she won't be able to get away? But no, she stops it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm like, why didn't she just pause it and then finish things and then go back again? But anyway, she stops DeBicki by shooting herself on the television screen symbolism, and her and Schmidt fire the thing, get back, fire the thing again, but sans water. Everyone's happy. Houston, well, not Houston. What is it? It's like...
Huntsville is what they call it.
Alabama. They're like, Huntsville, check it out. We figured it out. And Huntsville's like, cool, good shit. Get back here. And they're like, Roger that. And then...
No, I mean, you have to say that then that's when you hear Michael being like, tell them not to come back.
Yeah, so this is the thing. I almost just said, would we be cool with me pausing so I could try to pull up Netflix on my computer to play it? But I really think that that might make my computer explode. So I'm not going to do
it. Yeah, let's not do that.
So Huntsville's all like, all right, great, come on back. And then Michael is in, not Michael Snydell, her husband, Michael, who is still
Roger
in this,
Davies.
In this shelter
bunker?
With this little girl who he saved.
I don't know.
It's a shelter. It's a bunker. A bunker can be a shelter.
Whatever.
You're sheltering is a shelter. Sure. I was part of an active shooter situation, and we were told to shelter in place. So for 2 hours, my office was my shelter.
That's not great.
Well, that's living in Washington. So what I was going to say is, so Michael's like, oh my God, that's great. They're back. And Huntsville is like, yeah, we told them to come on down. Like, the price is right. And Michael's all like, what? You can't, like, but did you tell
price
them
what's going
on? Price is wrong. The guy's like, no, we didn't tell them what was going on. There was a bad connection, but their ship had been through hell. They really had to get back. And Michael's like, yeah, tell them to go back. And Huntsville is acting like they have no idea what's going on. And Michael is acting like, you know, oh, you know how there's that crazy lion that is in that pit? We asked your wife to jump in that pit. And he's just like,
yeah,
you gotta tell her to get out of here. Yeah, that'd be better. And then you see the capsule dropping through the clouds, a beautiful cloudscape. And then there's silence and calm as the camera lingers on the clouds. And then a giant CGI middle finger shoots up and your phone becomes sentient and kicks you in the fucking mouth. No, what really happens is the non-literal manifestation of all that, which is an apparently 4,000 foot tall Cloverfield monster slams its head through the clouds and then roars at the camera, and then we cut to black.
Mm-hmm. Which...
Yay!
It's weird that this is almost... It feels like a trend of the 2000s. It's weird that we're talking about. I was going to try to say something intellectual, but yeah, this was some stupid shit.
I like how you went from like trying to tie it into like new millennium anxiety and stuff, and you're like, yeah, it's just fucking dumb.
I loved your description though, Brian. I'm not going to take your thunder. You got to tell me what you said this was like.
I said, you want the whole thing or just what I said the ending was like?
You could do either. You own that thunder.
Choose, Michael. Choose.
Oh, man. But there's so many options. So, yeah, Michael and I were talking about this earlier. It was actually funny because we were on Slack. Not the Slack that you can become part of if you're a Patreon member by going to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. But we were talking on Slack about the end of this, and Bill wasn't there. And so we had to warn him not to read what we'd written. But I said... I said, oh God, where is it even? Yeah, Michael and I were talking, blah, blah, blah. Michael, your reaction was just, wow, yes. Huh? Okay, yeah. And then I said, take the log line from 20 better movies, mash it into a gray lump, sprinkle it with actors who deserve much better, and then throw in a final shot that plays like Porky Pig at the end of Merry Melodies, and you have the Cloverfield paradox. Because, I don't know how crafty all of our listeners are, but if someone could rip the final like 30 minutes of this film, everything from when Huntsville is talking to Michael to when the Cloverfield monster pops his head up, but I want you to dub over the roar with Porky Pig saying, that's all, folks. Because that's what it is. Boy. It's the dumbest thing. Because, like, I, you know, Bill, you were talking about being ahead of this. I was like, oh, they're going to have the capsule be the thing that fell in. And it turns out that they're not in the right Earth. Or literally anything else.
That's better.
But instead, and I was so baffled by the ending of this, because I'm like, it's not even like they crashed down into the water and then the Cloverfield monster came out of the ocean and it ate them up. It's like you see the capsule super small in the distance falling, and then suddenly this monster pokes above the clouds. And I was like, how tall are clouds? I Googled how high up are clouds, because I couldn't think of the right way to phrase that question.
Sure, something tells me that's going to be a popular Google search.
Well, so here, like, I looked it up on Wikipedia. There's a number of different choices to choose from.
Yes, there are.
As far as what kind of clouds there are. And so here we have high level, mid level, and low level. And so I was like, level stratus clouds, let's see what a low level cloud is. And it's 6,000 feet.
Okay. Yeah. No. False.
These are the type of clouds that may produce a light drizzle or small amount of snow. So if you live in a place that has either of those weather patterns, you know, when you look up and you're like, man, the sky looks really close today. It's still 6,000 feet. Yeah.
The only explanation is that they landed in the middle of Colorado, and maybe because they're that high above sea level anyways, like maybe the cloud forms are a little bit closer.
But he said it was splashing down on the Denver coast.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious, because he's not like, Michael, whoa, stay where you are.
They did say Denver?
Oh, Delaware. I'm sorry, Delaware.
Okay, I was about to say, I'm pretty sure it was a coastline city. Okay, all right, cool.
It's funny, because Huntsville is talking to Michael, and instead of being like, stay where you are, we're sending an escort, mm-hmm. Huntsville's like, hey, bro, why don't you get to Delaware?
Yeah, like, they're like, go pick him up.
Yeah, it really seemed like they were like, so soccer practice is going to be over at 5, so you should get there. It's the Delaware coast. That's where they're splashing down. And
don't
busy,
worry.
So if you could just, like, go hang out and, like, you know, watch them float in, that'd help us a lot.
But you see, like, the thing about... Sorry, I really kind of want to break down this ending. I mean, we've already mentioned that, like, the Michael scene earlier, like, revealed that a Cloverfield monster was maybe here. But, like, to return to that at the end, it's insulting either way. But, like...
Yeah.
But, like, the very fact that we already know that this exists, like, it's not clever. It doesn't add anything. Like, if anything, it only underlines how much this feels like a parody, as you're saying. Like, this might be a good place to jump into 10 Cloverfield Lane's ending. So spoilers for 10 Cloverfield Lane. So 10 Cloverfield Lane, like, as it ends, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character finally gets out of the bunker. And a lot of good stuff happens. And she gets out, and she thinks everything is fine until some monster, dog-like monster alien things arrive and want to fuck up her day. And then it finally climaxes in an insane theme park ride where a living ship tries to engulf her pickup before she then makes a Molotov cocktail with some bourbon and throws it into the gaping maw, and it explodes. And it's
some high proof bourbon.
It's an insane scene, but like, and I don't particularly like it, but like, I will say thematically, it is like a really nice piece of almost dark humor after everything she's been through that she then faces.
And she even calls out, like, she actually calls it out in the movie. She's like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, as soon as she realizes,
because at first has just got me underground, and then she gets out, she's like, see, it's fine. And then the aliens show up, she's like, oh, come on.
Which is like one of my favorite moments of that movie, because it's her basically commenting on A, how ridiculous this fucking movie is, and B, like the ridiculous idea that, like, okay, this is tied to Cloverfield in this also, way. And you're just like, oh, shit.
And also what I love about it is sometimes the maniac who is entrapped or imprisoned you below ground is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not particularly about how he's treating you, but about the threats that exist. Yes.
Sure. And I think I think the other last thing that should be said about that is the scene after that is like kind of weirdly moving in a way where she ends up at
when
a little
she decides to go to Houston
to be in a, to be at a fork in the road and decide that, you know what, like, yes, she's been through a lot, but she can do more. Like, yes, it is. Brian, I'm not even going to remotely disagree with you. It feels pigeonholed and it doesn't. But compared to this. Like,
well, because okay, like, I would love to. I'd love to bounce off of what you said, because
okay, go ahead.
So you know, you're saying, like, you know, the end of that movie is crazy, but here's the thing: it's crazy in a way that is still engaging with the main character, and that continues to serve as character development for her.
Sure.
And then when she comes to that fork in the road, and I think the radio broadcast is something like, if anyone has any fighting experience, you're needed in Houston, or you can be a fucking civilian and go to Oklahoma and be safe. And she's like, you know, I guess I have fighting experience now. I'm going to go and do what I can. And as she's driving, you see the thunderclap or the lightning flash, and there's like a giant ship behind a cloud or something. And that's the kind of cool world-buildy hint of something greater that I loved about the first Cloverfield that, like, again, if the movie hadn't been called Cloverfield, I probably would have really loved. And again, I have grown to love that movie in the last 24 hours just because of the Cloverfield paradox. And like, that's awesome because, you know, you understand the journey that she's gone on, and the next step is her actualizing what she has learned on that journey. And in this movie, the two surviving astronauts, one of them is just German, and the other is a woman who has decided not to go and insert herself into the life of her Earth 2 doppelganger, and is like, yeah, maybe I can go and, like, try to have another kid with my husband. But she never even really says that, so it doesn't matter. And then she's like, so they haven't really grown, they haven't changed, and when you see that monster at the end, it's just that kind of shitty, oh, out of the frying pan into the fire. Like, but there is no fire, because that's not an imminent existential threat to the characters that we've grown to love, nor have they entered into it willingly with any agency of their own. So it just becomes a cheap, and I mean that in both the narrative and the financial sense, way of tying this movie to Cloverfield. In a way that really makes it seem like
poison the well. Like, that's what it feels like.
It literally feels like at the end, someone was like, okay, did we feel like with the guy who has the last name of the guy in the other movie and Slusho and Tangerada and everything, do we feel like we've made enough connections? It's like, no, I don't know, man. And it's like, well, what if we just had the Cloverfield monster pop up out of the clouds like Porky Pig? And someone was like, I mean, it'll only cost us another $40,000 to animate that. And they're like, yeah, just throw it in.
But there is something to, I think that it's fair to say that we're adding to a lot of vitriol on the internet right now. If you look up Cloverfields from whether it's outlets or the general populace, not many people like this movie. But I think I think there is something, you know, in the narrative around not only Cloverfield, but J.J. Abrams, that, you know, like, you think of the controversy around something like Star Trek Into Darkness and the retcon of Khan. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. For, Star Trek Into Darkness. 2, the retcon of Khan.
But anyways, and my point being that, like, there is something that not only this movie serves as, you know, a really sad statement about the state of affairs at Netflix and the studio system, but also about, you know, JJ's brand as well. Like, not only just Cloverfield, but also that, like, you know, you thought, you know, like, you know, we already, as if the creators were already saying, you know we pushed it a little bit with 10 Cloverfield Lane, but let's just make it and fully double down on the fact that this is more just Twilight Zone than any type of connected universe. Like, there's something.
And then
something...
they treat the Cloverfield monster like Rod Serling.
Exactly. To make it.
He pops up at the end and he's like, this has been the Twilight Zone.
It's an extra layer of cynicism that you wanted to believe wasn't there, but has really been like manifested
in
a movie.
I'll tell you what, my wife loved Cloverfield just like me, and she was able to get over the 10 Cloverfield Lane thing a lot easier than I was. And she found out that I watched this without her and was very upset with me for all of 3 seconds until I told her that it was a dog shit movie. And then I said, here, let me show you the ending. And so I gave her a quick rundown of, like, so they're in a thing and they go to another place and then they're back and they're like about to return to Earth. Here, I'll hit play. And she watched it, and her lack of a reaction was the reaction. It was almost like I had tricked her by showing her the YouTube video of the panda sneezing and scaring the other panda. It was like she didn't believe that what she had just seen was the ending of an actual movie that I had taken time out of my day to watch.
Yeah.
And like, that's just kind of how it is. Like, and I told her, I was like, and now you feel all of my rage and disbelief, but without having to have wasted the time on it. It's, I mean, fuck this movie. I just like, I really can't, it's more insulting that they threw in the Cloverfield monster at the end, like so boldly, as though they were like, yeah, isn't this fucking rock and roll? Like, this is it. Now you know how it all happened. And it's like, but I didn't, yeah. This isn't not, what is the Matrix line? Not like this. Not like
not
this.
Like this.
You know?
Oh, Switch.
R.I.P. Switch.
Yes.
And APOC.
Okay.
Spoilers for the Matrix. Okay. So we've been talking for an hour and 36 minutes. We should probably wrap it up, and this is how I would like to do it. I'd love to do a round robin.
Oh, boy.
Where, as quickly as possible, say the name of a movie that
that's
this
better?
Movie steals from that did it better than this movie.
Fine.
So I'll start. Sunshine. Oh, wait. We should probably come up with an order. It's going to be me, and then Bill, and then Michael, and then me again.
All right.
Okay. Sunshine.
Okay. Event Horizon.
Coherence.
Alien.
Oh, are we going back through again?
Yes, we're doing it all over again.
Source Code.
Time Crimes.
Another Earth.
Oblivion.
Oh my god, that's a good one.
The Thing.
Oh, fuck, I had one. Damn it, Michael and I did this earlier.
You did like 30.
Oh, well, Life.
Did we have Alien already?
Yeah.
Ah, well, fuck. I don't know, man. This game's dumb. I don't like this game anymore.
Time Cop. All right, Bill has given up. All right.
Arrival, Interstellar, Moon, Life, Sunshine, Coherence, Another Earth, Triangle, Primer. Sunshine, Q.
Okay,
gravity.
Stalling too much.
Gravity. Other stuff. Gravity.
Yeah. Gravity is a good one because I was really frustrated that they got in these nice fancy suits and they were like, let me tether over and scoot across this long beam in the middle of the fucking space.
Yeah,
I was like, they don't
really
have jetpacks? What the fuck?
They never had
what the fuck is this movie?
They never had the zero G moment that you expect them to have. Nope. And also gravity, much better
across that
off,
shit.
Much better at pulling off the woman in space with dead children or dead child.
Oh my god, I forgot about. Oh jeez, this is a bad movie.
Yeah, gravity is the gray in space, which is why I loved gravity.
I loved the gravity.
So that's it.
Yeah,
we've touched this
movie
to fucking death. There's another one coming out at some point, apparently.
Is about World War II. Yeah,
I like the cast.
I actually am. I'll watch it.
I love the cast for this one, though. This is, I'm just concerned. Like, I'm, as with all franchises, there could be the off moment. And I'm hoping that the next one is better. But, like, at this point, this movie, like, what is the mystery? Because now it's just like anything can happen.
Sure.
It doesn't really matter. It's all because these six assholes fucking didn't put some damp rid inside of their goddamn particle accelerator.
Well, I mean, do you guys know the basic premise of the next one?
It's something to do with World War II.
It is. Yeah, it's something to do with World War II. It kind of sounds like a on D-Day, they find something supernatural, apparently, during the battle.
During
the D-Day battle. Yeah, behind enemy lines.
All right. I mean, that sounds interesting in a way. Nazis are in vogue again, so that could be... It could be strange and interesting. I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where I'm kind of like, you know, even after the disappointment in my own mind about the overarching mythology as presented by 10 Cloverfield Lane, I still had this curiosity because I'm like, well, where did those aliens come from? What do those aliens want? Like, we're obviously kind of matched with them, but like, what's going on there? So I'm like, well, I guess if the next one is something that somehow ties them together, or if we like find out that they're concurrent or something, like I could still be interested in this. But now after this, it's just basically like, it's not even as interesting as if they just had an archaeologist open a literal Pandora's box that then set creatures throughout history to like hurt people.
That sounds fun. I'm into that.
Okay, so new idea for a movie. An archaeologist in present day opens literal Pandora's box and then is conscripted by Zeus to travel through time with him, fighting everything that was released by it.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
This movie sounds expensive.
Tom Hardy will play Zeus.
No, he's got to have a mask on.
Zeus can have a mask.
I guess.
What if he has
like
a battle
fine.
Helmet that has a mask?
There you go.
Okay.
Just like mostly cover his face and we're good.
Yeah. Tom Hardy plays Black Panther.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway. Speaking of Black Panther, that's going to be one of the next things that we watch. This coming weekend, we're not still quite sure what we're going to be talking about. It could be Golden Exits, or it could be Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, or it could be a lot of other stuff. We'll figure it out. So that's it.
But I think Jumanji has a nice tie-in to this film.
Well, why didn't you mention it then, Bill?
What?
No, because y'all got to see the movie.
Oh, okay. So this is like a real... Okay. I'm now very curious.
Yeah.
Is it Gugu Mbatha-Raw?
No.
Damn. All right.
Every time you say her name, I'm going to laugh.
I feel like that is the most culturally insensitive thing you could say.
I admitted that's not the greatest thing that I could say, but you know, like some names make me laugh.
That's fine. I just recently rewatched Mad Men, and every time that someone would refer to him by his actual name, Dick, I had a chuckle. But it's even funnier because he's literally named after the fact, and you know what? Spoilers for Mad Men. He's named after the fact that his prostitute mother, in dying and giving birth to him, continuously repeated that she wanted to cut his father's dick off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good times. And spoilers for Mad Men.
We have spoiled so many things today. Jeez.
Most of them I feel like we're within our rights time-wise to spoil. You know, it's not like I brought up the Phantom Thread and talked about all that stuff.
Honestly, if you are a big This Is Us fan and you haven't watched that episode by now, like...
Again, though, I am not a This Is Us fan, but even just by the Super Bowl ads, I was like, oh, this is the one where Jack dies. And then I was like, why do I know his name? Why do I know that that's a thing that people are waiting for?
Like, I thought people knew that he was going to die, like, a week ago.
Yeah. They're like, all your questions will be answered. And I'm like, great. So is the show over now? Will I never have any more questions about This Is Us?
No. You'll always have more questions.
This is true. What happens to the dog? So anyway, let's get out of here. Patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Give us your money.
Give us your money.
Yes. Go to movie.com/filmstage to get a free 30-day trial to Mubi, which every movie on there I can pretty much guarantee is better than the Cloverfield Paradox. You can see some great films that premiered at Sundance as part of their Sundance Selects thing that's going on. I'm starting to lose my ability to talk. And in addition to that, Lover for a Day.
This is Earth 2, Brian.
What was that?
This is Earth 2, Brian.
Yeah, Earth 2, Brian has taken over. Lover for a Day in theaters now. Go to loverforaday.movie.com to find out if it's playing near you. And for your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. That is all for today. Gentlemen, it has been a distinct pleasure to be able to talk about this god-awful movie with you. less than 24 hours after it premiered on Netflix. And now we never have to talk about it again, which is great. Because it's fucking terrible.
Burn it.
So let's
burn it.
Burn it to the ground. Bill Graham, why don't you tell the people at home where you'll be found between now and the next time that we get into their ears?
You can find me watching more Great British Baking Show because I'm on the finale of season 2. I'm way behind, but man, this show is great. I love the soggy bottoms. I think there's like 8 or 9. So there's a lot. To go. Yeah, there's a lot to go. And apparently there's an American version too. And I'm real mad about that because I just want the British people.
The mediocre American
Mary Berry
show.
Oh, Mary Berry, you watch it too. Yes.
Well, my girlfriend watches it. I've seen a bit of it.
Okay. I watch it with her. It's great. You can find me watching that and laughing at every time they say soggy bottom and make fun of the male judge because he's a real stickler. He at one point he mentions that he wants it at a certain height, what they're cooking, and he literally fucking brings out a measuring stick and he's like, nope, didn't make it. Okay. And you're just like, wow. Yeah. These are amateur bakers too. They do this in their hobby. So yeah. Anyways, you can find me writing about that probably on Twitter. I'll just go make some tweets now specifically so I'm not a fucking liar. And you can also find me on the Patreon Slack channel where we're probably going to be talking about this. And what's that alien game where it's like set in World War II and the Allies have been like almost defeated because they're like the Nazis are using aliens or no, the
Resistance
aliens
Fall
have invaded. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that this fucking movie or the World War II one kind of reminds me of like that kind of setup. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Michael Snydell.
You could find me on Twitter stocking up supplies for the impending Cloverfield monster attack. So on Twitter at Snydell and on Letterboxd on at Snydell. I need to eat something and go. Let's finish this.
All right. I'm going to take my time to talk about all of my stuff. Yeah, you can find writings of mine on thefilmstage.com. You can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, same with Letterboxd and all other social media things. You can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net, which got hacked the other day, and I had to go through all of my back end, deleting the malicious text that had been put in. I wasn't even hacked by someone who like hated my opinions. It really feels like Chinese robots just like wanted to put ads for shoes on random pages of my website.
Who's to say Chinese robots don't hate your writing?
I mean, that's probably true. That's a very good point. If anyone's going to hate me, it's going to be a Chinese robot. But anyway, it's back up. Of course, I haven't written anything new there in like 3 months. But hey, if you want to listen to some three-month-old thoughts of mine, read them up. Go there, dearfilm.net. And that's about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us and tune in next time. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule.